312-981-7200 is our phone number. If you have a question for Dr. Ben Singer from Northwestern Hospital, he joins us now. He will take your calls. Doc, how are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'd like you to know, it's kind of a weird thing I do. Top of the hour news, I always try to disinfect everything in the studio. Do we need to do that on a regular basis right now just to be safe?
It's a good idea, particularly if people are coming into the environment who aren't wearing a mask or are sneezing, coughing. It's a good practice.
I try to remind people during this time, especially when it gets warm, don't let your guard down, because we've done it for so long. We think it's going to be ending, but we still need to extend this for a little over a month, don't we?
Yeah, probably at least. That's right.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. We have two lines open. Doc, I want to ask you a few questions first. Number one, do we need to wear gloves? And if so, why?
Generally, I would say no. Wearing gloves poses a few problems. One is that if you're wearing gloves, you're just washing your hands less. And there's nothing kind of intrinsically more sanitary about wearing gloves. The gloves can still pick up all the same things that your hands are. And if you're not changing your gloves, washing your gloves as much as you would your hands, which I can't imagine that any of us would be, they can actually cause more problems than they help.
Well, I probably asked you this before, and I'm not sure of the answer. If we do wear gloves and we walk into a place of business or we're at the grocery store, do we wipe our gloves? I mean, if they're leather gloves, I know non-reusable gloves, we'll just throw them away.
Right. So the disposable gloves, like you would find in a doctor's office, those are meant to be single use. You wear them once, you take them off, and then wash your hands. For fabric gloves, leather gloves, those could still pick up things. I think it's less likely that they're going to transmit them, but wiping them down, or if they're fabric, washing them with a detergent, I think that makes sense. But again, the best thing is to just use your hands and wash them regularly.
And the face mask, first of all, I hate wearing the mask. It drives me crazy because I chew gum and it keeps moving up and it hits my eyes or my eyelashes. And I'm constantly touching my face, which number one, defeats the purpose. But number two, do I need to wash these masks that are made out of cloth? Do we have to wash those on a regular basis?
Yeah, you should. So remember, detergents are really good at killing this virus. So the detergents you would use to wash cloth masks should be very helpful in getting rid of the virus. But as masks get wet or dirty, they can certainly carry other things even besides the coronavirus. So washing them regularly is a good idea.
How often washing? Every day? Every other day? What is it?
You know, I think I can't give you a firm guideline. I think every day makes sense. But certainly if they are wet, dirty, visibly soiled, you want to wash them even more frequently than that.
I mean, mine looks brand new, but I've been wearing it since the beginning. It is a cloth mask.
That's good. It sounds like you have a good one. You know, depending on what they're made of, some fabrics are more durable than others, right?
Right.
And they're just going to be able to last longer.
And again, explain it to me. We wear the mask to protect other people from ourselves, right? It's not to protect ourselves from other people, but it does work that way.
That's right. The main reason to wear a mask is to prevent the spread of droplets that carry the virus from your nose and mouth to someone else or to a surface that someone else could then touch and then spread to their face. They also kind of serve as a social reminder that we're all kind of in this together and that we all need to maintain a certain amount of social distance.
Yeah.
So it kind of serves as that cue, that kind of social reminder also.
708 area code, I wear disposable gloves to give my hands a rest because they are getting so chapped. I mean, that's the problem. We got to make sure that we're using lotion because we're washing our hands so much.
Yeah, that's right. So keeping your skin healthy is really important, too. So after you wash your hands, putting on some sort of moisturizer makes a lot of sense. Again, the gloves will not be a substitute for washing your hands. The gloves can trap bacteria and things next to your skin. So when they come off, your hands need to have a good wash just as they would otherwise.
All right. Dr. Ben Singer from Northwestern Hospital on the phone with us. 312-981-7200. Irene in Janesville, Wisconsin. What's your question for Dr. Ben?
My question is, I know that the virus is not killed when we wash our hands. It just slides off more easily, correct?
No, soap and detergents are actually quite effective at killing this virus. There are parts of the virus that, there are parts of this virus that are actually made of little bits of fat molecules, believe it or not. And as we all know from washing our dishes, soap is really good at disrupting those fats, and it's the same thing for the virus.
There you go, Irene. Thank you. 312-981-7200. How come it takes so long, Dr. Ben, for a vaccine?
There are a few reasons. One is that we just learned about this virus a few months ago, so we have to develop a big set of knowledge about the virus to learn how to target it.
Right.
But then in terms of what takes a long time for the vaccine, it's testing. Because remember, this vaccine is going to need to go to millions and millions of people. And so we really have to be sure that it is safe to give to that many people, as well as understanding how effective it is.
Wow. Let's go to Mary. Mary, what is your question for Dr. Ben Singer?
I have a face mask that has the HEPA filters, like from a vacuum cleaner bag, but therefore it's not washable. Can I microwave it, and will that help to kill the virus in between uses? Because it's cloth, HEPA filter. Cloth.
Yeah, great question. Doc?
Yeah, no, it is a good question. I would say no. I mean, I can't tell you for sure how microwaving something and heating it up would interact with those filters. A lot of them do have plastics in them, and so I would worry that if they get too hot, they can kind of melt and lose their efficiency. But in general, that type of heating won't necessarily inactivate the virus either. The filter is an interesting idea, but I think it may actually not be working the way that you would want it to.
Wow. Dr. Ben Singer from Northwestern Hospital on the line with us, 312-981-7200. We have one line open. Dr. Ben, I'm going to have you hold on. We're going to get back to you in a second. Again, we have one line open, and we can get your text messages, too, at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Dr. Ben Singer from Northwestern Hospital on the phone with us, getting tons of text messages. Does vinegar work to kill the virus?
Probably not. It's probably not a strong enough disinfectant. The best disinfectants are the ones that read right on the label that they're effective at killing viruses, and detergents overall are quite effective.
Do I need to wipe down my groceries using antibacterial wipes when I get home?
Probably not. We don't have any evidence of transmission of the coronavirus by food. And antibacterial wipes, if they're not designed to kill viruses, wouldn't work anyway. So in general, I would say no.
Is it best to let my hands air dry or dry with a towel or paper towel?
Drying with a paper towel and throwing that towel in the trash is probably the most sanitary way to do it. But if you have the time, I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with air drying.
In February, I was diagnosed with type A flu. How do I know it wasn't coronavirus?
That's a good question.
It really is.
If you had the diagnosis of flu A, then you did have flu A. The question is, did you also have coronavirus? We know that in a number of cases, people with coronavirus also tested positive for flu or other viruses that cause similar symptoms. So it's a good question.
Okay, let's go to Sam in Bridgeview. Sam, thanks for holding. What's your question for Dr. Ben?
Yes, I have a question. When you see people walking around and you see that their clothing has not been washed, you know, for a while or a week or whatever, and they keep on wearing it, how do you know that they're not carrying it in their clothing? And that even though they have a face mask and gloves on, it looks kind of like there's a possibility that they're
Let them answer. Can they carry the virus on a coat or their clothing? Dr. Ben?
Yeah, probably not. Remember, the main way that this virus spreads is by little microscopic droplets that come out of our nose and mouth when we breathe, talk, laugh, speak and other things like coughing and sneezing. And so carrying on fabrics is probably much less of a concern. And that's why there's really an emphasis on the masks to decrease the transmission of those droplets from the person wearing the mask to someone else. So again, much less concern about transmission on the fabrics that we wear.
Can this virus be transmitted through sexual activity?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we're learning a lot more about how different types of viruses spread throughout the body and whether they can get into semen or vaginal fluids.
Okay.
That data are just coming out now, and so I can't say a firm no, but certainly during sexual activity, you're going to be sharing close breathing space with someone else, and that would definitely be a way that it could be transmitted, again, just from those droplets coming from the nose and mouth.
All right, let's go to Bill in Mokena. Bill, what's your question for Dr. Ben Singer from Northwestern?
Yes, good afternoon, doctor. My question is about wearing the respirators. I'm a little confused about why wearing the respirator only protects the wearer when I've worn masks for construction work is actually to protect my lungs from the airborne dust and particles that I was creating on the job site. I'm a little confused about why it only protects the wearer at this point.
Yeah, great question. So a respirator will protect the person who's wearing it. And a respirator is a much more, I guess, fancy kind of mask that is designed for people in the hospital to wear. And these are like the N95 respirators that are specially designed to block the very, very small droplet particles that that can cause the infection. While construction work can generate particles in those size, most construction masks are designed to filter out larger particle sizes, so particles the size of dust.
Okay, let's go to Dave in Chicago. Dave, what is your question for Dr. Ben?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Doctor, I visited someone on the 26th of April, and then on again on May 3rd, the following Sunday, and I found out afterwards he is asymptomatic COVID. When does quarantine start, on the 26th or the last time I saw this person?
Yeah, unfortunately, it would be the last time you had an interaction, so I would start the kind of 14-day or so clock from the last exposure, most recent exposure.
Oh, boy, that's rough stuff. Thank you, Dave. Let's go to Margaret. We have one line open, 312-981-7200. Margaret, what's your question for Dr. Ben Singer?
Yes, I wear oxygen, and I have been denied going into a store. What can I do about that? I cannot wear a mask.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's tough. Depending on the type of oxygen that it is, if it's the small nasal prongs, it should still be possible to wear a mask. But if it's a different way that the oxygen is set up, that may not be possible. And so it's tough. And remember that the recommendation to wear a mask is for everyone, if at all possible. But in cases of people who need to wear a different type of mask because they need it for oxygen or other inhaled medications, or if they have facial deformities or some other reason that they just can't wear a mask, then they can't wear a mask.
How about hand sanitizer? Are we putting it on correctly? We have to get the tips of our fingers, right? Just not the palms of our hands?
Yeah, to put on the hand sanitizer, put a good dab in the center of your palm and rub it all over in between your fingers, on the sides of your nails, get all those surfaces covered. That's right.
And that's just like using alcohol on your hands, but it's got to be, what is it, over 60% or 70% alcohol?
That's right, at least 60%. Most of the ones that you're going to see are 70% or higher.
Okay, let's go to Marge in Indiana. Marge, thanks for holding. You're on with Dr. Ben.
Well, thanks for taking my call. My question is, I know you said, and it's true, we won't have a vaccine, but we need treatment. And Remdesivir, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it correct, is only given intravenously. What's your opinion on them getting that to be an oral medication to treat COVID, COVID-19? Mm-hmm. I mean,
great question. Yeah. Let him answer. Thank you, Marge.
Yeah. No, it's a great question. You're absolutely right. So remdesivir is a medicine that is given in the hospital through the IV for people who are quite sick with COVID-19. And we have a little bit of evidence now that medication, remdesivir, is effective in shortening the duration that people are ill with the disease. And that's a good thing. There are new agents coming along that are being tested that work in a similar way to remdesivir, meaning that they target the same part of the virus, but can be taken by mouth. And so we're getting more and more experience and more studies with these types of agents to understand if they could also be effective as a treatment. Because you're absolutely right. We do need effective treatments.
Right. So what have you heard about a vaccine? Because I've read about Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson that maybe by June they'll have something, testing in the fall, maybe the first of the year with the vaccine. Excuse me. What have you heard?
Yeah, that's about right. So some of the groups that are farther along could have very early trials in people happening as soon as the summer. But these are very early, what we call phase one trials, that are just to understand if the vaccine is able to even develop an antibody and cell response in the person. And importantly, to understand if it's safe. So to make sure that there aren't any large toxicity signals from those early studies. And if those studies are positive, then it's worth, in the, you know, kind of the way science works, to move on to larger and larger studies, ultimately culminating in a very large study to try to really determine the safety and efficacy or effectiveness of the vaccine. And that's one of the main reasons why it takes so long until we get a vaccine sold on the market.
Got it. Okay. Dr. Ben, I'm going to have you hold on. Every line is full. We got to get to these calls before we say goodbye to you. Okay. Can you stick around for a little bit longer?
Sure thing.
On the phone with us is Northwestern Dr. Ben Singer. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Doc, we're going to get through these calls in a second, but there's a few great text messages. I'm using a surgical mask as opposed to a cloth mask. Can I assume by setting it aside for a few days and rotating in a fresh one that the virus will die on the mask after a few days and wear it again? Is that safe?
Yeah, that is a reasonable assumption. But remember that the surgical masks are really meant to be single use only. Even in the hospital, we will really only wear those for up to a day or one shift at a time. Because unlike cloth masks, even though they do provide a bit more protection, they're less durable.
Okay. Can a bandana work as a mask? Of course, right?
Yep, it can absolutely work as the kind of face covering that's recommended for the public to prevent spread of droplets from your nose and mouth to someone else.
All right, let's go to Michelle in Frankfurt. Michelle, what's your question for Dr. Ben? Michelle? All right. We got rid of Michelle. Let's go to Ron in Arlington Heights. Ron, what's your question for Dr. Ben?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, now it's been mentioned that hypertension is a increased risk factor for COVID deaths, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, now if this hypertension is adequately managed by medication and the numbers are reasonable, is it still an added risk?
Yeah, that is a really, really good question. And we don't quite have the answer to it yet. The available data would suggest that even controlled hypertension, just having the diagnosis of hypertension, still carries some risk. That being said, having better controlled hypertension than worse controlled hypertension is good for so many reasons that I think adhering to your blood pressure control medications and lifestyle is still really important.
Now let's go to Ann in Munster, Indiana. Ann, what's your question for Dr. Ben?
My question is this. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Doctor, I'm prone to getting cold sores, but I hadn't gotten them for, at least 5 years. And I got my first cold sore in February on the lips, and then I took care of that with calendula, and it went away. And then on March, a couple of weeks later, or several weeks later, I should say, again, I got the feeling, the tingling of getting another cold sore. And sure enough, there was a little cold sore there. Mm-hmm. And I treated it again with calendula. I know that that's a virus. Are they related? Or is there some concern that I should have with watching myself, of course, extra carefully?
Is there a correlation, Doc?
No, they're very, very different viruses. So the virus that causes the cold sores is a type of herpes virus, and that's in many ways very, very different than the virus that causes COVID-19.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Jeff in Barrington. Jeff, what's your question for Dr. Ben?
With the summertime coming, we have all the mosquitoes coming in. Can a mosquito give you the virus?
Can we get the virus from a mosquito? I don't think we know yet, but Doc?
Yeah, we don't know for sure, but probably not. This is probably not a bloodborne virus that could be transmitted by a mosquito. The viruses that mosquitoes carry are much more like the ones that you'd usually think about, so West Nile virus in particular.
Dr. Ben Singer on the phone with us from Northwestern Hospital. Mike in Glenview, what's your question?
Hi. Thanks for this segment. It's very helpful. I've had, let's see, the last time we were saw or talked to anybody was March 17th. I had a doctor's appointment that day. And a couple of weeks, for the last several weeks, I've had a very, not sore, but real scratchy, extremely dry throat. And no fever, but it really isn't getting any better. Now, I do suffer from allergies. I take Claritin and Zyrtec alternatively each day. I have suffered from allergies each year, just never to this extent. So I'm wondering if I might have, this might be a reason to get tested, or if it's probably more like allergies.
Doc?
Yeah, sure. It's probably allergies, but of course I can't say for sure, and it's certainly worth a call to your doctor for the question. It would be unlikely to have COVID-19 causing that symptom for so long, just in isolation. But again, a call to your doctor is probably a good idea here.
We always say, when in doubt, call up your general practitioner.
That's good advice for pretty much everything here.
Let's go to Al. Al, what's your question for Dr. Ben?
Hi, Dr. Ben. As in occupational therapy and physical therapy, the supply of N95s and KN95s and even the paper surgical isolation mask are in low supply. And I just want to know, what's your take on putting them inside of a brown paper bag sprayed with Lysol and leaving them there to the next day and reusing them?
If they're not beat up. Right. I think you answered that. You already said that would be okay, right, Doc?
Yeah, I think that's okay. I wouldn't spray them with Lysol. I think, you know, just letting them set aside is okay. That's a very reasonable way to extend their use. But again, if these disposable masks, if they start to look wet, soiled, visibly dirty, that's the time to replace them.
Do we need to spray Lysol in our place of business if we're still coming downtown like we are here at WGN or at our house?
Spraying Lysol in the air probably doesn't do all that much, but what you mentioned at the start of the segment about disinfecting things by wiping them down with a disinfectant that's effective against viruses, I think that does make sense.
Okay. Dr. Ben Singer on the phone with us. By the way, the governor is not doing a press conference on the weekends anymore. He made that announcement, so the governor will not be speaking today, and I'm sure he would love to take off Mother's Day. Jan in Lake Villa, what's your question for Dr. Ben?
Hi, I was wondering if it's safe to leave the mask in the car, the cheap disposable ones, because in the summertime it gets pretty hot in the car. Is that safe to leave them in there so you always have one with you whenever you go places?
Yeah, it's probably okay. I'll be honest, I don't know the manufacturer recommendations for most of the surgical masks about the upper limit of temperatures that they recommend before the mask might start to break down. But that might be some information to track down, because you're right, the inside of a car can get quite hot in the summer around here.
I have a cloth mask that I keep in my car around my stick shift.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, because cloth can get plenty hot. It's not going to break down like the plastic fibers within the surgical masks.
Got it. Let's go to Jennifer. Jennifer, what's your question for Dr. Ben? Thanks for holding.
Hi, Hi, Dr. Ben. I'm an ER nurse. I've been an ER nurse for 26 years. I think we're kind of like not negating the fact that we're not talking about immunity and how that it plays a role in beating COVID-19, also taking vitamin D, and, you know, just your immune system in general. I have discharged, well, my hospital has discharged over 900, and we're still discharging 900 patients who were positive.
Wow.
Now, Jennifer, we're talking about comorbidities.
Well, Jennifer, where do you work? Where do you work? Oh, I lost her. That's okay. Well, doctor, we've talked about... we've talked about keeping your immune system up. You got to get the proper sleep. I've mentioned vitamin D. I take that on a daily basis, but go ahead. You can answer her.
Yeah, she brought up a lot of great points. So it's wonderful to see people being discharged, right? I mean, that means that people have come into the hospital sick and have improved to the point where they're able to go home. In terms of keeping your immune system in as good a shape as possible, you know, we don't have drugs or supplements that are able to really get your immune system better than normal. If you're deficient in a vitamin, you're deficient in a mineral, that's what those supplements are for, to make sure that those levels are where they should be. You mentioned vitamin D. Vitamin D deficiency is quite common. And so if you are vitamin D deficient, taking those supplements can definitely help support overall health.
And but taking more than the recommended vitamin C on a daily basis isn't going to help?
Unfortunately not. No, it won't.
Okay, let's go to Jeff in Barrington. Jeff, thanks for holding. What's your question for Dr. Ben? Jeff? Okay, let's go to Karen in Willowbrook. Karen, what's your question for Dr. Ben?
Yes, hi. I am somewhat overweight, and I heard that we should be staying away from sugar because that, I guess, exacerbates the virus. And I would like to know if complex carbohydrates are considered in the same category as sugar.
Doc?
The links between sugar and the virus are probably complicated and much more complicated than just staying away from it. It seems to be that the risk factors for doing poorly from the virus mean having a severe course or more related to diabetes and just being overweight or obese. And so to the extent that eating extra calories in the form of sugar or carbohydrates can lead to things like obesity, that makes sense. But there's not an easy one-to-one link, unfortunately.
Okay, good, because I had some cookies last night. I just wanted to make sure. Let's go to Kathy in Bolingbrook. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Doctor, I am a hot mess of comorbidities. I have cystic fibrosis lung disease.
Oh, wow.
I have related diabetes. I have related arthritis, arthropathy. However, for the arthropathy, I've been on hydroxychloroquine for 2 years now, and for my lungs, I've been on for decades azithromycin. I'm wondering if perhaps the combination of those two uncertain drugs might provide some protection against the virus taking hold, or if I caught it, might it have helped me get over it?
Yeah. No, it's a fair question. So the background is that medications like hydroxychloroquine, sometimes in combination with azithromycin, have been thought to serve as a treatment for COVID-19 or even a preventive therapy. More and more data are coming out that probably isn't true, though. We still need more definitive data. We do have data from people who have rheumatologic conditions, like you mentioned, inflammatory arthritis, who take hydroxychloroquine. And in those people, it doesn't appear that being on hydroxychloroquine is able to prevent the virus or prevent a severe course. That being said, if you need to take those medications for your lungs and your joints, obviously stay on them, but it's not clear that they are going to provide much benefit for you in terms of COVID-19.
All right, let's take one more call, but I have a text message. How much vitamin D supplement should a person take daily?
It depends on what you're taking it for. So there are different forms of vitamin D for people who are very deficient right? So if you have a blood test showing that that you have very low vitamin D levels, you might be on a different form. There are different recommendations for people who are postmenopausal, who may have impaired bone health, so osteoporosis in particular. So it really depends on who you are to give that number a firm recommendation.
I talked about this with you. I had a blood test a few years ago, and I take 3,000 to 5,000 IUs daily because I had a deficiency, and I still.
Yeah, and that's right, and that's probably the right number. And again, a lot of people are vitamin D deficient, so that's not uncommon. The numbers for people who are taking vitamin D and calcium to support bone health are probably a bit lower than that. Mm-hmm. But again, that's a very what you mentioned is a very reasonable range for people who are diagnosed to be deficient.
How about fiber supplements? Doesn't having fiber in your body, doesn't that fight cancer?
Yeah, right. So high fiber diets are probably beneficial to limit your risk of getting things like colon cancer. That's right. It's hard to link a specific fiber supplement to that effect, right? But eating foods that are rich in fiber, that's a good general recommendation.
I try to do that, but I take instead of doing the Metamucil liquid, I just take a few tablets in the morning and a few at night. Is that okay?
Yeah, I think that's fine. You know, particularly keeping your gut healthy, and if that does the trick, then that does the trick.
All right. Last call. Let's go to George in Grays Lake. George, thanks for holding. What's your question for Dr. Ben?
Oh, hi, Doc. My question is reopening my office in about a month and having it fogged or sterilized. What's the time limit that might protect the office?
Yeah, it depends on exactly how the disinfection procedure takes place, but you know, let's assume that it's quite effective. It'll be effective until someone comes in and breathes on something, and so that's what Pete mentioned the segment starting about discussing is that disinfecting surfaces regularly in an office environment makes a lot of sense as things start to reopen.
You got to keep wiping that down. Thank you, George. Doc, wow. I mean, I couldn't answer the phones fast enough today. We still have people on hold, but we got to move on. Do you want to wish your mother a happy Mother's Day?
Absolutely. Happy Mother's Day to my mother and all the moms out there. You bet.
I love it. Dr. Ben, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure. Stay well, Pete.
He is just the best, man. Just fires it off. And the thing is, being a doctor, I mean, just to know this information as people are talking about their medications, just so good. So thanks again to everyone over at Northwestern, including Dr. Ben Singer.